Thank you, Mark, and good afternoon. It's a tremendous pleasure to be here today at this moment when the conversation is focusing on looking upstream and looking at root causes. It seems to me like a conversation a long time in the making and one that I'm extremely excited to be engaging with today. I began my career in HIV prevention about almost a decade ago now, going out into the field in the mobile unit doing HIV testing and counseling, conducting evidence-based interventions with groups of MSM, recently arrived Latino immigrants, and case management. And it was with my community that I was working, as a gay-identified man, as a Latino man, as a man born in a poor, the lower class in the Bronx. These were my people, this is my community. It was tremendously fulfilling work. At the same time, it was tremendously challenging work because the numbers kept coming in and it seemed like we were just fighting this uphill battle and we weren't really making the progress that we really wanted to make. And I kept thinking about how do we change the context? How do we get to the root reasons as to why certain communities, my community, was being disproportionately impacted by HIV, AIDS, by STDs, by a multitude of other social ailments? So that brings me in thinking to where I wanted to be and where I am currently in thinking about youth and their environment in schools where they spend the majority of their waking hours. And how do we change that context so that their adulthood is healthy, that they engage in healthy practices? And that's where my conversation stems from today, and how safe schools contribute to the well-being of LGBT youth. I'm coming representing GLSEN, which, as Mark mentioned, is a gay, lesbian, and straight education network. At our organization, we believe that we know that when one child or group of children is harassed for any reason, all the children in that school experience their space as unsafe. We strive to ensure that each member of every school community is valued and respected regardless of the sexual orientation or gender identity expression. We recognize forces such as racism and sexism have similarly adverse impacts, and we support schools in seeking to redress all such inequities. And finally, we seek to develop school climates where difference is valued for the positive contributions it makes to creating a more diverse and vibrant community. We have four pillars that guide our work, so I'm just going to give you a little bit of background about GLSEN and then get into a little bit of where we fit into the HIV prevention model. We work on safe learning so that every school is safe, so that all students do not have to experience name-calling, bullying, and harassment, and then they can engage in the learning process to reach their potential. We believe in and support respectful learning, where all members of every school community learn to accept and respect all people, including LGBT people. Healthful learning, ensuring that every school promotes positive self-esteem and healthy identity development for all students, regardless of sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. And that extends to the health classrooms where we should be seeing ourselves and our realities as LGBT people represented, and positive explanations of how to engage in healthy relationships as LGBT people. And then learning leadership, which is ensuring strong future leaders by fostering their development and building leadership skills in schools, such as through gay-straight alliances. Now, some of you may have participated in the plenary this morning. Some of you may understand why safe schools would be a segue to HIV prevention and healthy sexuality development. But there's one model that I want to share with you, which is the CDC Health Impact Pyramid. It's one model that I think is particularly useful in understanding how all of our different interventions and different areas of work fit into HIV prevention, STD prevention, and healthy sexual activities. So in the pyramid, at the very from the base to the top, you go from largest impact to lower impact. And at the very base, the importance of this model is that it acknowledges that public health involves far more than healthcare. that the fundamental composition, organization, and operation of society form the underpinnings of the determinants of health. Similar to what Durrell was just speaking about, issues such as racism, classism, sexism, all those isms have an impact on the health trajectory of our youth and us as adults as well. So at the very basis pyramid, the tier that has the largest impact are the socioeconomic factors. If we change those factors, if we impact those, the trajectory of our youth is going to be greatly impacted. These are, because socioeconomic status is a strong determinant of health, both within and across countries, very well documented. And the lower tiers reach broader segments of society. If we move up one tier, changing the context to make individuals' default decisions healthy. This tier includes practices such as policy enactments, taxing certain items such as tobacco, fluoridation of water. In this section is actually where safe schools would fit, because we're changing the context that all of our youth can experience safe and empowering spaces where they can develop positive self-identity and benefit from the education process to reach their potential. So the defining characteristic of this tier of intervention is that individuals would have to expend significant effort to not benefit from them. Moving up in the tier, we have long-lasting protective interventions. These are one-time or infrequent protective interventions that do not require ongoing clinical care. Examples in this tier include immunizations, as well as colonoscopies, which they happen once every 4 or 5 years for adults. Another example in this tier would be male circumcision for HIV prevention. It's a one-time intervention, but the lasting impacts can be significant. One more tier up, we're looking at clinical interventions, which are ongoing. One example in this field for us is HIV medication regimens. But this tier poses some difficulties in effectiveness because we know that not all of our community can access the necessary clinical intervention that they need. And that even if they do access it, adherence is not always consistent. And that even if they are adhering, there's imperfect effectiveness of the treatments that we are providing and that we have access to currently. At the very pinnacle of the pyramid, we have counseling and education. Same area that I began my work in, same amazing, fulfilling work. But at the same time, it's difficult because it's labor-intensive and it's difficult to reach all of the community that we really need to get to with the information. And it's also indicative, at this point, is symptomatic of the failure to establish contexts in which healthy choices are the default decisions for our community. So we're sort of being very reactive at this point. And it's necessary. I mean, Frieden says, who developed this model, was that implementing efforts at each of these levels can achieve the maximum possible sustained public health benefit. So we're all necessary in this work. But he also states that interventions that change the context to make individual decisions, default decisions, healthy are generally the most effective public health actions. In community-based organizations, in nonprofits, in government agencies, we don't always have the tools or the capacity to change the socioeconomic factors, but many times we do have the ability to push for policies or to create our own interventions that are changing the context for broad segments of society, for different units. And so that brings me to back to GLSEN and what our data is showing us. We have a biennial national climate survey, the last one was conducted in 2009, which speaks to the current status of, or the current state of our K-12 schools in the U.S. and the experiences of LGBT youth. In the most recent study, we see that 61% of our LGBT students feel unsafe because of their sexual orientation, and almost 40% of the youth feel unsafe because of their gender expression. Now, we know that students who experience high levels of victimization are more likely to not plan on post-secondary education. They're more likely to have missed school in the past month. And they, on average, have a GPA average of about half a grade lower than their peers. And that's because of the hostile school environment that they are living in. So we have a theory of action. This guides our work. This guides my project that's actually funded by CDC, Division of Adolescent and School Health, to continue the work that we're doing in creating safe schools with the end goal of HIV reduction for our MSM population, particularly our MSM youth of color. We believe that if you have supportive school staff, that is, school staff that intervene when they witness bullying, school staff that understands how to speak with their youth when they come out to them, and who understand how to recommend them to further supports, whether that be HIV prevention or testing units, or whether that be other external support groups that reflect their identities. When you have inclusive curriculum that is representative and reflective of LGBT people and our role in history, and they present it in a positive light. And when you have effective school safety policies, and enumerated anti-bullying and harassment policies, non-discrimination policies, transgender and gender non-conforming policies, when you have these three things, the students experience an increased sense of safety, fewer homophobic remarks, fewer negative remarks about gender expression, fewer instances of assault, less victimization, and less harassment, which then leads to improved attendance, higher educational aspirations, greater academic achievement, greater sense of belonging, positive self-esteem, improved self-image, less anxiety, less depression, and less sexual risk-taking. So we see our work as central to this initiative and the work of supporting our youth to live healthy lives, free of HIV and STDs. And we think that working at this level of the pyramid is essential if we really want to move this work forward, and we don't want to continue seeing the disparities that we continue to see on certain populations, primarily LGBT youth of color. So in thinking about what you can do next, I think in agencies and nonprofits, in divisions, looking towards ways that you can support initiatives such as this that get to that change in the context tier, supporting it financially, partnering with agencies that are already leading this kind of work, or making your own initiatives that are going to get to this level of change. And we're all in this together, and thank you for the commitment that you post. Thank you.